expense per side. We have read the briefs, we have studied the case law, cited the briefs, and one of us has been into the record to some extent prior to this argument. So we think we understand the facts, we think we understand the basic laws as set forth in the briefs. So we would recommend that you go immediately to the legal issues involved, unless you feel absolutely compelled to spend time on the facts. Time is kept track by a module that is on the lectern in front of you, which has a green, yellow, and red light. It's green for the first 10 minutes, yellow for the next 5 minutes, and red when the argument is over. We'd be happy to help the appellant reserve some time for rebuttal if you want me to help in that regard. The countdown clock will certainly keep you posted as to how much time you have left. The lectern is equipped with a microphone, the purpose of which is to pick up your voice for both recording and amplification purposes. We digitally record the arguments and they're placed on the internet within a day or two following the argument. So if you want to review the argument after it's over, you're certainly free to do so. There are toggle switches on your right, would raise and lower the lectern to your comfort, and if you find it uncomfortably high or low, please feel free to adjust it. And finally, we would appreciate it if anyone in the room with an electronic device that might unexpectedly make noise, an iPhone, a cell phone, a BlackBerry, whatever, please turn it off, or at a very minimum, put it on silent so that if you're summoned, it will not disturb the court, the panel, or the counsel in the course of what we call an argument, but which I prefer to refer to as sort of a conversation that we're going to have here. And it's better that nobody be interrupted in the course of that. So unless somebody has a question or an issue they need to raise prior to the argument, we're ready to commence, Mr. Flanagan. You want to help me? Want me to help you reserve time?
I will want to reserve, but frankly, I don't know how much time depending on the questions.
I'll let you know when you have 2 minutes. That might be.
I don't imagine I'll go initially more than 10. So, good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Tim Flanagan, and I have the privilege of representing the landowner in this case. On the way over here today, I sort of thought I was walking through Cheyenne with the way the wind was blowing.
Been to Chicago lately?
No. I don't have big shoulders and haven't been there. My partner, Catherine Eubank, wrote the brief and certainly commend the brief, which you've read, for most of this. As you know, this case deals, this condemnation case deals with the landowner's position with respect to a statute that was passed some 20 years ago that authorizes a reclamation bond in this context. There is not any interpretive case law, and I don't know that we present any significant issues here other than the basic application of the statute. What I would urge you is that there's a difference in eminent domain proceedings between compensation or damages and this reclamation bond. It's not the two sides of the same coin as the pipeline company would have you believe. If you have looked at the record, there was a lot of drilling activity in the late 70s, early 80s. And sometimes these private companies got a little out of control, and that precipitated this statute, which gives, frankly, in condemnation issues, there's not too many rights that a landowner has other than the basic right of compensation. There's the constitutional right of fair compensation, but there is now this statutory right for a reclamation bond, and it's something separate and apart, although maybe it tends to overlap sometimes. But it's separate and apart from the landowner's right to compensation.
How many property owners were involved in this pipeline, if you know?
Well, this is a long pipeline and went through a number of different states. We had a combined, I had represented four people in the Ray area, and we had a combined immediate possession hearing for four different landowners.
Now the bond was something like $242,000. Was that for the entire pipeline, just for the pipeline in Colorado, or
no,
just for your client's property?
Just across my client's property, and frankly, the bond was $404,000, because under the statute, the judge is to make a determination as to what reclamation costs are and then double it, because the bond is really not damages to the landowner. It's to create a financial incentive upon the pipeline company to do what they say they're going to do.
Isn't it to indemnify the pipeline company, or to step in case the pipeline company fails?
Well, yes, but because the pipeline company will simply go back because the insurance company, in this case, I believe it's a Safeco bond, but because the insurance company is simply going to lean back on the pipeline company, it creates an incentive for the pipeline company to do what they're going to do. Now, in all practical matters, the reclamation work is done by a contractor to the pipeline company, and they shift the burden of this under their contract, as they did in this case. But the point is, it is a protection for the landowner. And where I was going is that if you've looked at the record, if you've looked at a Google photograph of this property, even from a satellite, just as you can make out roadways, you can see the scar of the pipeline that was built in the 60s that this pipeline is now paralleling. And it was because of those poor reclamation practices in the past that the legislature passed this statute. And frankly, the Old Star pipeline was a Williams Brothers pipeline just like this. So there is a little justice here. But
Council, at the reclamation statute referring to, and then looking at the order releasing bond, it looks to me like the trial court went verbatim out of the statute and making its critical determinations, where it says that under CRS 381-1015B, the court is satisfied that the condemned land has been restored to the same or as good condition as existed prior to the installation of the pipeline, which comes right out of the statute. And then he says, and that for respondents' agricultural land, the soil has been restored so as to provide for the continuation of such agricultural activity, which also comes right out of the statute.
Yes, it does.
What are we to do with those determinations and findings with the trial court?
Well, they're rather remarkable findings since there was no hearing. I submit to you there's no evidentiary basis for those determinations by the trial court. The pipeline company did ask for the bond to be released, and they did put in an affidavit that said, we have completed our restoration work. We have reseeded.
So there was no evidence or anything in front of the court to make those determinations?
There was contrary evidence from our side. When the pipeline company asked for the bond to be released, we said, no, we'd like to have a hearing, but we attached and we said, we think you have to have a hearing, because how else can you make a determination that the ground is in as good a condition as prior to construction?
So there was only contrary evidence before
yes.
the judge? There was absolutely no evidence to support the position that it took, where he could have weighed in on a conflict and decided against you?
Not to the extent. There were photographs that showed that what reclamation efforts had been done, the mulch had blown away. There was a contrary affidavit from my farmer, the landowner, and really all they said was, we have spent 4 days restoring this, and we're done with what we intend to do. Now, I think that misses the point as to what the bond is. There hadn't been a growing season at that point. Now, under various different, for example, BLM standards or any other reclamation standards, there is usually a significant period of time that one has to wait and test before we know whether a ground cover crop has grown. And certainly it's different between a cultivated field, an irrigated field, which we have one sprinkler in this case, And that's different than out in the sand hills, the grazing land. The reason the scar is there, and you can see it fit from the 50-year-old pipeline project, is that out in the sand hills, things tend to very fragile soil, and when you break it the first time, things tend to blow away. You can create, the wind can change the topography. We don't know if the reclamation efforts have been satisfied. So we suggest that under a fair reading of the statute, we are at least entitled to an evidentiary hearing on that question.
Now, in addition to the releasing of the bond, the order releasing the bond, and the court quoting from the statute, it then goes on to talk about a stipulated agreement or a settlement agreement between the parties.
There is a settlement agreement. It is in the record before you. But we thought, certainly the landowner thought, that we weren't giving up the reclamation bond. This dispute occurred afterwards. The stipulation before the court was that the parties disagree as to whether or not that has been resolved. The court certainly found that because we accepted a settlement, we had given up any right to a reclamation bond. What the pipeline company suggested to the court, and I think is their argument here, is that if we accept a settlement, and it might, because it's a negotiated number, it might have related to future crop losses within the 75-foot corridor, that therefore we have given up any right to reclamation. And I suggest to you that reclamation is a lot different than future crop losses. Reclamation can be issues about weeds. It can be issues about ground cover. It can be issues about ground subsidence. It's a lot of things other than whether or not there's enough cover there for a cow to go over and chew on it.
Well, the pipeline company is not the pipeline is not released from its obligations to maintain that land and restore it by virtue of the bond going away. That obligation remains, does it not?
I don't. If I made a claim 2 years from now because the ground cover hadn't come up, you can be certain that they would claim that's res judicata, that we can't go after that the bond has been released, and therefore there was this finding that Judge Roman just read, that the ground is as in a good a condition as it was before, so you can't touch us. That's what we'd be facing. The bond really only is a guarantor of someone's obligation, but they certainly are not willingly going to go out there and do any more reclamation work if we ask them to do that, given the state of the record here, which leads one to the anomalous situation about whether or not a landowner then, if you accept their premise, if a landowner can ever voluntarily settle a case and why would they if they're going to lose their reclamation?
Well, the agreement could have reserved reclamation. It didn't reserve reclamation.
Well,
it indicated there was a disagreement about whether the bond should remain, but it didn't reserve any reclamation obligation.
Well, I think the term damages is different than reclamation, and we only acknowledged receipt of money for compensatory damages. It doesn't say in there that we accepted anything for reclamation obligations.
It says general release language.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Reserve the balance then.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. The central issue here is in the interpretation of the settlement agreement and the related stipulation of the parties. Contrary to the landowner's position, this is not a question about the intersection of just compensation and reclamation obligations under the condemnation statute, because here the district court never reached a determination of what the just compensation owing to the landowner was. The parties instead settled on their own. And the settlement agreement, which you have, is clear, it's comprehensive. The payment language, in particular, in paragraph 2, provides a lot of loaded terms that have import to what is being discussed today. First of all, it indicates that the landowner is receiving money in full satisfaction of all compensation and damages as a result of the easements granted and the installation and operation of the pipeline. So if we kind of break that down.
But Council, what do you do with the second part of that that says the parties have not agreed on whether the statutory bond filed on May 2nd, 2007 in the amount of $404,000 should be released? The parties will address that issue separately with the court.
Once the parties had agreed in principle as to the amount that was to be paid and what it was to cover, and we were specific about that, then we got down to the nitty-gritty and said, all right, we'll dismiss the lawsuit, we'll release the deposit, we'll release the bond, and suddenly everything blew up. And there was a question about whether the bond and the function or purpose of the bond was encompassed by that. It would be a little like the parties reaching material terms of settlement and then one side saying, but I don't want to dismiss the lawsuit because I might have a claim yet to make. And the pipeline company's position was there is no claim left for you to make under the reclamation bond.
But what do we do with that clause? I mean, it's not superfluous. It must have been there for a reason.
It was added in the parties' negotiations after everything else was done, basically to indicate that already under this, what we view an enforceable settlement agreement, there is a dispute that we are asking the court to resolve. So we didn't want the court to entirely dismiss the case until that issue was resolved. But we view it as an enforcement of the settlement agreement, which had been reached. The parties agreed on the terms of it. And
Mr. Flanagan's right for the wrong reason. That is, if he does come back and say, this grass didn't grow, I've got a desert out there, the sand is blowing, you're going to say res judicata or it's all in the settlement agreement.
Absolutely.
Which one is it?
It's all in the settlement agreement. That we have compensated the landowner for the expectation that the grass wouldn't grow. And the party's stipulation on the motion to release the bond specifically said that the settlement money is to pay for any other claim for damages, including grass loss. And the negotiation documents, which we've provided to you as well, show that the compensation and settlement was for prospectively 10 years of future grass losses. It was fully covered. So yes, if the seed doesn't take and if the grass doesn't grow, he's already been fully compensated for that. To say that we would pay in settlement 10 years of grass losses, but allow him to come back and make a claim against the bond for grass losses is a windfall for him.
James, it does say to the remainder of the property. So could not that be construed as if there somehow happens to be grass loss to the area that's outside of the easement?
Potentially, although we don't have any evidence that that is the case. I think the parties have focused on the corridor in which the pipeline was constructed.
What about your obligation to provide erosion control on the easement?
I do think that's ongoing. Under 38.1.101.7, there is an ongoing obligation to provide erosion control. And the bonding issues, which are under section 101.5, are completely separate. So irrespective of whether there's a bond in place, we have an obligation to provide erosion control if we've caused erosion.
The most logical cause of erosion would be windblown sand because the grass didn't grow.
Very likely.
Is that close?
I think that could be close. And so we have an ongoing obligation under that statutory provision, but the obligation to provide reclamation under a bond is no longer necessary. They received, in essence, a cash out of that, or the functional equivalent in terms of the settlement amount. because the settlement does state very clearly that this is not merely a payment of just compensation for the easement. It says it is compensation and damages for both the easement and the installation and operation of the pipeline. And it's not only those damages or claims which were made in the lawsuit, but which could be made. And that's how the parties settled it. It's not only currently where we stand, but it's prospectively as well. And the parties acknowledge very clearly that this is to cover all claims that could be made for grass losses in particular. We've made the argument that the crop losses were waived below, and I'll just reiterate that here in the opposition that they filed to the motion to release bond. They did say that the crop losses would be mitigated in terms of normal cultivation. So we are really looking at
that's the irrigated grass. Excuse that's me. The irrigated grass.
Exactly.
What's your response to the position that there was no evidentiary basis for the court's findings as far as the requirements for release of the bond?
The pipeline company disagrees with that. I would note first that the only time an evidentiary hearing was requested, it was done so in the context of setting a time when the judge can view the subject property. In other words, the landowner wanted a site visit. That was the only context in which a request for evidentiary hearing was made.
Well, even if there's no hearing, there has to be some sort of evidentiary basis for the findings.
Absolutely.
And what was that?
And so although there was no in-courtroom evidentiary hearing, nor was one requested, there was the submission of competing affidavits. The landowner was able to submit not only the affidavit of his client representative, but also a land valuation person and some photographs. In return, or on the other side, the pipeline company submitted an affidavit of the project manager who had overseen the reclamation efforts and spoke to those issues. So we did have certainly an opportunity for the presentation of evidence in the documentary.
But the affidavit of the project manager didn't say that the grass was growing, didn't say that the reclamation was successful. It merely said they had done what they were supposed to do and they weren't going to do any more. Isn't that basically true?
That's true. Apart from, you know, the ongoing erosion control, which is separate. And so the court then, the district court, went through, made the findings, and included in its findings the statement that any other potential crop or grass losses have been satisfied by the party's voluntary agreement in settlement and are not recoverable under the statutory bond.
Under your view, you could have just filed an affidavit that said we're not going to reseed it because all grass loss is covered by the terms of the settlement. Is that right?
And it is somewhat ironic that we went ahead and did reclamation, but it was a function of the timing of the settlement. We had already performed the reclamation before the parties reached a settlement. But I think it is the case that because they were fully compensated for the very eventuality that might occur were there no reclamation, we didn't even have a duty to perform the reclamation. We did it, as I say, as a function of timing. But what the district court's findings, I don't think, are really subject to much challenge. The third piece of those being that the damages were paid. There's no contest about that. That the soil had been restored to provide for agricultural activity. And again, I don't think there's really much debate on that. There's a question of whether the seed has blown away, but that doesn't pertain to whether the soil itself has been restored to agricultural activity. So the question then becomes whether, under the first factor, the condemned land was restored to the same or as good a condition as prior to the installation of the pipeline. And in that respect, the district court made two findings which are entitled to deference under the Sheridan Redevelopment Agency case. The first was that, in fact, it was the same or as good condition. And second, that anything beyond where it was now was already satisfied by the party's voluntary agreement and settlement. and could not then be recovered under the statutory bond.
Isn't the one finding that in its pre-construction condition almost impossible to make, because surely there was grass there before and perhaps more than there is now? So, I mean, you've scarred the land. You've got to come in. You've come in, and I appreciate, replace the dirt in some sort of reasonable sequence and mm-hmm. plant it. But to say that it's in the condition it was before the construction project is a little bit of a stretch, isn't it?
Well, it was the decision of the district court after having before it photographs of the property. So, as I would say, they're entitled, the findings of the court should be given deference. But particularly here, where the landowner has already been compensated for anything, any damage to the property that hasn't yet been remedied. Otherwise, you're giving the landowner the opportunity to be compensated for not having grass growing, and then an opportunity for an indefinite period of time to make a claim because grass isn't growing. The two completely overlap. And to give him both would be a windfall. The one piece I wanted to mention as we kind of talk about the statutory provisions, the way that the condemnation statutes are set up for a pipeline condemnation is that you have an entitlement to just compensation for the land taken. And that's a present value of the land. And in fact, you are not allowed to take, or you need to take into consideration the fact that the property will be reclaimed at a later date. That cannot be included in the amount of compensation because there's an independent reclamation obligation. Here, the value of the land taken was somewhere between $25,000 and $40,000, and ultimately the court set the deposit for the value of the land taken at $39,000. As you know from the parties' settlement agreement, the amount paid was much more than that, and because we've got visitors in the courtroom and the terms are subject to confidentiality, I won't say more with respect to that. But the landowner, in essence, cashed out the reclamation obligation by getting payment for the value of the land taken and a lump sum of money for the potential losses down the road, the future or prospective losses that would have been covered by the reclamation piece. So, in that respect, there was a full compensation, and any of the entitlements or protections that would be due a landowner under the condemnation statutes were in effect provided only here in the context of the settlement agreement. Is there any other questions?
There's not.
Thank you.
Just a couple of points. Grass loss is not reclamation. The fact that my client was compensated possibly for some grass loss in a negotiated number doesn't mean that we have discharged our reclamation obligation or that the pipeline company has. As I indicated to you, reclamation can be a lot of other things besides whether grass grows within the 75-foot perimeter of the pipeline. It's subsidence. But most important, it's out there in the sand hills, it's erosion control. It's what, because that whole thing could blow away. You can lose a hill up there from a cow path. I suppose that's something you could take judicial notice of. But the point is we clearly did not, I don't believe, we clearly did not give up our reclamation obligation.
Well, they seem to concede they have an ongoing erosion control obligation. And as I recall, the trial court so found.
Well, there's no finding to that, okay. In that regard. And certainly the erosion control statute is different than the bond statute. I think they go together. They were passed together. And you know, one just puts teeth into the other. It's like the difference between damages and specific performance. I think we settled our damage claim, but we didn't settle our specific performance claim. If they have reclaimed like they say they have, we will have no claim against the bond. There's nothing we can do. But we want to make sure that they have done it properly and that we haven't put a parallel scar to the Old Star Pipeline property. And that's what we're seeking here, and that's what I think we have. The statute in issue, 101.5, paren 2, says that when we go to trial and when the jury determines fair compensation, they are to assume that they're going to have the benefit of reclamation. So that's you know, one of the things that goes into consideration as to whether or not we hold out for what one expert has said is over $500,000 in future losses, or whether you settle it for something else.
How much time does the bond have to stay in place before you can determine that it's been reclaimed?
Until we have a hearing and a court has a factual basis to make a determination that the land is in as good a condition as it was prior. That's the touchstone to the statute. Once they have in fact completed reclamation, not just put seeds in the ground, and a court can make that, well then the bond goes away. For agricultural property, I think there has to be some determination as to what was the ag use before and what's the ag use after, but it's the same sort of thing. And I don't think you can do that off of looking at a photograph that is put into evidence to say, see, it's all blown away, it isn't there. And that is the photo that she grabs and says, well, the court had a photo in front of it. It certainly didn't justify a determination that the ground was in as good a condition, because the person who proffered that photo had a much different interpretation, said, my ground is blowing away. Look at this. So I don't think we want to adopt an interpretation that would discourage people from settling these disputes, but that's in essence what the pipeline company's position is, because if we settle, then we've lost our reclamation rights. And frankly, how can you comply with the statute? How can you make those findings without some sort of hearing?
Thank you, sir. I thank both counsel for their briefs and arguments. The case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course.